So, welcome back, everybody. This is Night Flight, and yeah, James Bartley is back, and our topic will be the Israel and Iran war. Yeah, just what we needed, another war. And so when I looked at it, when it happened last week, I had the impression that Israel tried to do a decapitation strike. Yeah, we know they lost a lot of scientists. We know that certain people from the Revolutionary Guard was taken out. Even now, they are going at it with practically execution style, you know, cherry picking the points for people they want to eliminate. And I had the impression this is about regime change. And then on the day it happened, I will briefly share my screen here. So it is a Austrian publication, and I translated it into English. And it is Reza Pahlavi, the crown prince of Iran, who is in exile in the United States. And he gave a statement: "My fellow countrymen, Ali Khamenei, the foolish leader of the anti-Iranian regime of the Islamic Republic, has once again dragged Iran into war, a war not between Iran and the Iranian nation, but between the Islamic Republic and Khamenei. My message to the military, police, and security forces is clear. This regime and its corrupt and incompetent leaders do not value our lives or our Iran. Separate yourself from them and join the people. The Iranian nation's struggle against the destructive regime of the Islamic Republic is to reclaim and rebuild Iran. The solution is to overthrow the Islamic Republic through street protests and nationwide strikes. I stand with you in these difficult times. We are all fighting together, and we will win." So how he is fighting in this, I don't really see it, because he is comfortably in the United States.
Yes, clearly he's a propaganda tool. We've seen many such examples in the past where you have some expatriate, whether they're Iranian or whatever the case may be, making all these statements. So that doesn't surprise me that this person would be saying such things right now.
So, but you know, if you want to, let's say that was the goal, regime change. Then you need to have your troops on the ground ready as well. And I do not mean military troops, yeah, but you know, you have like color revolutions work, yeah. You have to have your troops ready to have their finger on the pulse of the mood in the country, and you have to set it up that there will be an uprising. But as of now, we don't see that.
The Iranian people are very much united against what is going on because the demands against them were unreasonable, to say the least. It was Trump, at the behest of his minders, that pulled the U.S. out of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. It was a very stringent program that would have ensured, via inspections and other means, that Iran would only use the nuclear energy for energy purposes, electricity, medical purposes, what have you. And it was Trump that pulled out of that. And then on top of that, not only are they demanding that they have no nuclear enrichment for no nuclear energy, which is outrageous considering that Iran is a sovereign power, right? Secondly, they're saying Iran must give up all of their missiles, which is tantamount to saying we want Iran to be defenseless. Think of missiles as being a latter-day version of long-range artillery. It's the only thing that's keeping the Israelis at bay. So to say that Iran must give up their nuclear enrichment program for peaceful purposes, and on top of that, give up the missiles, is tantamount to surrender, giving up the national sovereignty. And Netanyahu has already been on record as saying he wants a Libyan-type outcome in Iran. And we saw what the Libyan-type outcome was for Muammar Gaddafi. He spent his last unhappy moments in this world, having a metal rod shoved up his backside by a Sunni jihadist that was sent into the country by who else, right? So there's no way that Iran will do all that because it's tantamount to national suicide. They'll never do that. So there's no leeway, there's no give and take. You see, it's either all or nothing, right?
So what was this? I mean, I found that a little bit unprofessional. Marco Rubio comes out and says, yeah, the United States didn't know anything of this. And then Trump comes out and says, oh, no, I knew it all. And we gave them 60 days, and today is the 61st day. So what is going on there? Are they not talking to each other, or do they simply not care?
Clearly a coordinated effort because the Israelis were crowing about we conned the Iranians, we made them think that we were serious about negotiating. And then Trump chimes in and says, oh yes, I was going along with the con, I was going along with the charade also. Israel could not have done this without help in the ISAR arena, intelligence surveillance, all the targeting data, the satellite surveillance, what have you. Israel didn't come up with all of that. Much of it came from the US. So automatically, the US was in directly involved in the planning of this. So, yes, they're already involved. There's no getting around that. And what I hope is that the Iranians don't get pushed, painted into a corner where they feel compelled to launch missile strikes and drone strikes against all the American military bases throughout the Middle East, in the Gulf states, what have you, because then that will justify even more harsh retaliation. And on top of that, the U.S. foolishly, quote unquote, sent out an aging aircraft carrier, the USS Nimitz battle group, to go out there, and it's a sitting duck. There's a book that I encourage your listeners and my listeners to read. It's a novel called Nimitz Class, written by Patrick Robinson. Patrick Robinson was the ghostwriter for Admiral Sandy Woodward's autobiography. Admiral Sandy Woodward was the British Task Force commander when the British retook the Falkland Islands. And since then, he wrote a number of novels, a lot to do with covert operations, submarines, what have you. The novel Nimitz Class is about a renegade SAS officer of Iranian descent who has converts to Islam and uses all of his SAS skills to attack the West, including acquiring an Iranian submarine and torpedoing the USS Nimitz and destroying it and bringing about a war with between Iran and the US. So that is predictive programming, right? And this novel came out like in the 90s. So we have a similar situation now where this aging aircraft carrier, and we should have seen with what happened to the Harry S. Truman in the recent past, how I had to turn tail and hightail it back up the Red Sea, because it was not only ineffective, but it was on the verge of being destroyed. It already lost three fast jets, one of them due to a friendly fire incident. So the Harry S. Truman was completely impotent as far as defeating the Yemenis. Now, what they did was they attacked civilian infrastructure like they always do, shock and awe. But as far as actually attacking the Yemenis' missile launchers and what have you, they were largely ineffective. So if the U.S. Navy and carrier battle group, the Harry S. Truman, were completely ineffective against the Yemenis, how the heck can they hope to defeat the Iranians, right? So the whole thing smacks of just a deliberate provocation, an escalation, and nothing would please the warmongers more than the USS Nimitz getting blown up and sunk. It's a nuclear carrier, so there's at least two nuclear reactors on it. The one that it's operating on and a backup. So there may be more, but there's at least two. So not only if sabotage was involved, whatever the case may be, if the USS Nimitz was destroyed, it would also be an ecological disaster as well. If that one or both reactors went critical and they were unable to shut it down, I don't even want to think about that probability.
Here in Germany, there are voices that are saying there is an internal struggle going on between the Republican hawks and the MAGA isolationists. Can you see that, or do you think that is far-fetched?
There are a great many people who voted for Trump because they were painted in a corner. It's either we let these foaming at the mouth Democrats steal another election, or we vote for somebody that seems to have some degree of common sense. So it was, I don't want to call it a lesser of two evils, but there was a great many people that voted for Trump. And part of the reasoning behind voting for Trump, besides all the doing something about all the crazy mass immigration policies of the Democrat Bolsheviks, was that Trump, as part of his campaign promise, was that he was an anti-war president. He's going to stop the war in Ukraine. That's still going on, escalated. And he's going to stop this war between Israel and Iran. And just for, in case any of our listeners are not aware of the background to this, General Wesley Clark stated, for the record, that the U.S. will wage war with several countries. Regime change for all of them. They've already attempted regime change. They've killed some of these high-ranking Iranian military officers. It didn't matter if the guy was in a building full of civilians. They took him out anyway, right? So they've made a point of saying, we're going to not take over, regime change, all these different countries, Libya, Syria, et cetera, and they've done that. Iran is the last one on the list. So there is a schism now. There is a great many people who voted for Trump who know all about the Haaretz Israel, Greater Israel agenda, the Zionist control of the House and the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. Colonel McGregor made a very good point. He said Benjamin Netanyahu controls more senators and congressmen in the U.S. than Donald Trump does. Like, that's a very profound statement. So there are a great many Republicans, true, real conservative Republicans, that are pretty upset about what's going on. And then you have the foaming at the mouth Christian Zionist type of American, I guess, that is all pro war,
Like
that want war. What's that?
Lindsey Graham.
Oh, Lindsey Graham. Oof. Don't get me started about that guy. But yes, this could only end up badly if this trend continues. Because the war between Israel and Iran is intensifying. Turkey has already said if it push comes to shove, they will obtain nuclear weapons from Pakistan. And Pakistan has already come out and said if Israel nukes Tehran and Iran, then Pakistan will drop a nuke or nukes on Israel. And that's another thing that these foaming at the mouth war lovers who believe anything the lying media tells them, oh, we can't let the Iranians develop their own nuclear weapons program. They don't need to develop a nuclear weapons program. All they got to do is buy nukes from Pakistan. And always remember, people watching, the Pakistani atomic nuclear weapons program under AQ Khan was aided and abetted by money funneled from the US via the Bank of Credit Commerce International, BCCI. A lot of the money that was funneled into that bank from the US went straight to AQ Khan's weapons program. So it is no exaggeration to say that Americans, quote unquote, actually financed the Pakistani nuclear weapons program into existence. So Iran doesn't have to develop a nuclear weapons program. They can just, with their money, they can just buy nuclear weapons. So the whole basis of this war, the whole justification for it, is completely bogus. Now, what's gratifying to me, there seems to be a lot of ex-military people that are aware of this. And these are ex-special forces operators that fought in the bogus war on terror. And they're openly saying, no, this is not a good idea. We should not go to war against Iran. I was pleasantly surprised about that because I expected many of them to just switch back into the reset programming and say, yes, war. Iran cannot be allowed to have a nuclear weapon, et cetera, et cetera. But it seems that for many of them, the coin finally dropped. The coin finally dropped because, with the benefit of hindsight, they can see the bogus war on terrorism for what it is, right? They may not want to admit to themselves that it was a self-inflicted wound, 9/11, the attacks in New York and other places in America, but definitely they can see the outcome of that, where all these bases and all this military hardware were bequeathed to the Taliban, given to them, right? And the whole West is inundated with Islamic war refugees who were going around killing and raping people. So clearly the war on terror was a fraud. So a lot of military people, and I'm gratified to see this, ex-military people are saying, no, we don't need any more of this.
Today, I read that Donald Trump left the G7 early to deal with this conflict between Iran and Israel. Plus, the US embassy was hit. It's a minor problem. No, as far as I know, nobody was injured or killed, and
Israel.
in Tel Aviv, the US embassy, it has not been flattened or anything, but there is a bit of destruction. So do you think that is another puzzle piece to ramp up the rhetoric against Iran?
The rhetoric was starting several weeks back. If you remember, there was this CIA woman, ex-CIA woman, going on to all these podcasts warning about Al-Qaeda already in the country, 10,000 or whatever number suicide vest cells they're getting ready to hit. Just a quick side note about Al-Qaeda, which we know is a deep black NATO CIA Israeli asset. We know that. Anyone with common sense knows that. What was it, a day or two after Ibrahim Traore returns or goes to the meeting in Moscow, suddenly Al-Qaeda attacks Burkina Faso, like right on cue.
Right on
The
cue, yeah.
Al-Qaeda attacks right after Traore meets Putin. How convenient is that? And so we're already being prepped for this concept of sleeper cells, terrorism, but I think that there's going to be some false flag terrorism to really justify all-out war, and also to go after the dissidents, the people who know what's going on, the people who are speaking out about this. They're the ones. We already see this with how the ICE is going after anybody nowadays, it seems. Even Latino American citizens, if someone looks Latino, they're being harassed, right? That's just overreach. Go after the real illegal immigrants. Leave the legal people alone, the real citizens, the real people with permanent residency. Leave them alone. Go after the ones that Biden, Obama let in, right? So we're already seeing in broad outline what's going on, and we can't d separate what's going on domestically with what's going on in the Middle East, because they've let in so many of these jihadists, so many of these terrorists. This guy directly involved in a genocide in Rwanda, he was just arrested in Dayton, Ohio, of all places, the other day, right? And a lot of people don't realize that some of the foreign aid that was coming in from the West and America to Rwanda were machetes. I guess they sent them all in for agricultural purposes or whatever. But we know that the massacre of the Tutsis, a lot of that was done with machetes and so forth. So yes, I think that there's going to be false flag attacks. I think that it's possible the USS Nimitz or another aircraft carrier will be destroyed. It's not so much to rally the public to, okay, we got to go to war like another Pearl Harbor, not like another 9/11. That whole concept is played out. That's what the Project or New American Century said. We need a new Pearl Harbor if we're going to launch all these wars, all this regime change, right? And surprise, surprise, they got it. So it's not only that they may destroy one or more aircraft carriers and then unleash false flag terrorism in America as a just not just necessarily justification, but as a green light to go after anybody who is against any of this. I think that is part of the goal too.
So, do you think that it is a possibility that I mean, it's always an option, but maybe this time around we will see a false flag in the United States itself?
Quite possible, yes. Something very big, something that would dwarf 9/11. That's what I foresee. It's something big has to happen to justify emergency measures to do another lockdown kind of thing. Just round up people, mass detentions, et cetera, et cetera. And then it's going to be two-tiered. I don't think they're going to go after the leftists as hard as they should, or they you would think they would. I think it's the people out there that have an idea of what's going on. They're the ones that's going to be the target, because this is very much an occupied scenario where it's clear to me that Trump is not calling the shots. When there was a drone attack against Putin's helicopter, he's flying around in his helicopter. Suddenly, all these drones come and they try to shoot his helicopter down. Again, where did that intelligence come from? That must have come from the National Security Agency, National Reconnaissance Office, all these American intelligence agencies. And then when Trump was asked about the attempted regime change, decapitation against Putin, he acted like he didn't know anything about it. Well, if you look at it from both perspectives, I don't know which is worse. He either knew about it and was fine with it and then pretended not to know, or he really didn't know that all this was done without his knowing. I think the latter is actually worse, where he has no idea what's going on, and deep black elements of the military have just taken over and are doing what they want, and then they just leave it to him to just explain everything away. That to me was alarming. When they actually went after Putin and Trump claimed to not know anything about it. That was very, very strange.
So now, I don't know if you have seen the images, but I have some here to share. Because in parts, my goodness, wait, I have to. Yeah, here we go. In part, Tel Aviv looks like Gaza now. This is not Gaza, this is Tel Aviv.
And the Israeli government has ordered its citizens to not take videos of what's going on and certainly not to upload it. But some people still are, obviously, what we're looking at here.
Yeah. That is quite a damage.
Yes. And we're seeing, like, for example, when I go onto YouTube, there's a good number of clearly pro-Israeli YouTube channels where they're crowing about, oh, look at the damage that's been done to the Iranians. The Iranians are on their knees. The Iranians are finished. But that's all propaganda. Iran is a huge country, far more resources than Israel. Without American largesse, without all the billions of dollars, and without all the weapons and intelligence sharing, is Israel wouldn't last very long at all.
Yeah. So do you think that the thing is with the week last week when it happened at the beginning of the week, Netanyahu was still in trouble. He might have been ousted out of his office and before October 7th happened. There were huge protests. He had a lot of legal troubles. And every time something like this is closing in on him, then some huge disaster is happening. So, do you think that is also in his calculation to make sure that he stays? I mean, it feels as if this guy has been there forever.
Well, yeah, he's basically declared himself like Caesar did, not to compare Caesar with this guy, but Caesar
Yeah.
basically said, well, I'm dictator for life now. And that's essentially what Netanyahu has done. But there were a number of indictments against Netanyahu for corruption and other things, right? Not just him, but his family as well. In fact, there was a documentary that was going to come out. I think it was on, supposed to come out on Netflix, but that was stopped. It was prevented from coming out, but there are people that managed to get a copy of that, and it's out on the internet if you can find it. So there's no doubt that Netanyahu is fighting for his political life because they have the goods on him. They have the evidence against him for corruption. There are many Israelis that are against Netanyahu for what he did during the lockdowns. There are many refuseniks for decades now. There have been many people that refused to serve in the West Bank and do anything in Gaza. So there was already a lot of Israeli citizens, and of course, a citizen in Israel is the same as a military person because they're obliged to have military service at some point. And there have been a large number, a significant number of Israelis that refused to serve or fight against the people in Gaza, refused to serve in the West Bank, and that's a whole nother slaughter is going on right now that many people are talking about. So Netanyahu was hanging by a slender thread. So then October 7th happens. That's a whole nother story. There are many people who insist that they allowed this to happen, if not actively did it themselves, just to blame Hamas, et cetera, right? Even to the point, and they call it the Hannibal option, where if necessary, they'll kill their own citizens in order to advance an agenda, which we know that the governments do this all over the world, right? So, back to your point, this war is keeping Netanyahu in office, because the Israelis, they're now under direct attack. They really don't have a choice at the at this point, because the unlikely event the Israelis are going to rise up and do regime change against Netanyahu, I don't see that happening anytime soon. So whether they want to be part of it or not, they are in on it. And I've seen video today where there are people, seem to be Israelis, that were trying to get out of Israel. They're trying to fly out. They want to get out, right? So Netanyahu does not have much support. And there are many people in the military and intelligence community that don't like Netanyahu either. So without this war, Netanyahu would be convicted and he would go to jail. He has to keep this thing going. And Netanyahu also is beholden to the Chabad rabbis, who are always on his back to push this agenda forward. Because in the Chabad apocalyptic scheme of things, they need a thermonuclear war in order to bring their Messiah back, right? This is something that's not a secret. They've talked about this for a long time. It's a necessary prerequisite from their perspective, from their scheme of things, for their Messiah to come back. They need this mega bloodletting to take place. And as you know, by getting in the war with Iran, that also risked warfare with China and Russia too, which would be very bad for the entire planet.
But couldn't you argue that you have a similar movement in the Muslim countries with their eschatology, they're bringing back the Mahdi? So in a sense, two end time sects are, that's another layer that are confronting each other.
Yes, I would agree. And there's also the possibility that the whole conflict between Greece and Turkey may ignite again. We've just seen India and Pakistan go to war with each other, and thankfully things have backed off. But the whole world is on tenterhooks right now. And there's an article that people should take the time to read on global research. And it talks about the original basis for the Khomeini regime taking power. And that is that the CIA, Mossad, and MI6 brought Khomeini into power. And it must be understood, how would it look right now if Israel wanted regime change and wanted to destroy Iran, if Iran was still a westernized country? With women walking around in skirts with makeup on, with men walking around, very Western in orientation and in mentality. How would it look right now? No, that wouldn't fly. These people think decades and centuries ahead of time, unlike most people who think no further than the next paycheck, right? So it seems to me that they brought Khomeini into power. And part of that whole process involved the taking of the hostages too, because by taking the hostages, it set the stage for creating this worldwide fear and loathing of Islam in general. We know, and this has come out in a number of books, Robert Dreyfuss wrote a book about this, that the Israelis, the Mossad and Shin Bet, have had direct links with the Islamic Jihad. A lot of the younger people probably wouldn't be familiar with that name, but there was a terrorist group, so-called, in the old days called the Islamic Jihad, that was responsible for a lot of terrorism around the world. But they had direct links with the Israelis because it suits a particular Israeli purpose to foment Islamic radicalism. It's always been like that. We see this to this day with these Sunni jihadists moved into Libya, they're moved into Syria, they're moved here, they're moved into Burkina Faso, they're moved all over the place, right? We can't separate the two at this point. So they a necessary prerequisite for the war we see now was to replace a regime in Iran, which was largely Western in orientation, with Ayatollah Khomeini and the Islamic Revolution. Because now people can point, oh, look what they do to women over there. Everyone's wearing hijabs. It's just a backwards Islamic country. They're just terrorists. And now they're trying to develop a nuclear weapon. It creates another level of justification in order to destroy Iran. But really, it's part of the Yunnan plan, the greater Israel Haaretz agenda, and not necessarily to take over and occupy yet another Muslim country, but at the very least, totally destabilize it, and ideally, certainly in Iran's case, turn loose hordes of Sunni jihadists to run amok in that country. People have to understand that when the Iranian Revolution happened, the Islamic Revolution happened. First of all, the Israelis and the CIA had their hooks deeply embedded into the Shah of Iran's regime. The CIA and Mossad created SAVAK, the Iranian secret police. The weapons systems that the Iranians were using, especially in their long war with the Iraqis, much of that came from America. The F-5 fighter planes, the F-14 Tomcats, and all the spare parts that they needed, that came from the West. This was the basis for the arms for hostages transfers, which were set up, well documented, set up by Israelis. That whole arms for hostages deal back in the days, the Iran-Contra, that was all set up by the Israelis. So all of those had to come into play before today in order to justify going to war with the Islamic Republic. So people need to go back and read those articles and do their homework about how this whole thing came about. This would not look good if Iran was a westernized country with women walking around in skirts. In t-shirts, right? So that's another factor people haven't taken into account.
Over the weekend, I listened to a couple of interviews on this issue, and I also heard a statement that this conflict will not end with diplomacy. It will only end if either Iran or Israel is completely obliterated. Do you agree with that?
Well, the direction that it's going, neither side is going to back down. Iran has so many more resources. Colonel McGregor was on a podcast the other day, and he was saying that the Iranians are making a point of launching their older missiles precisely so the Israelis will expend all their anti-missile missiles, knocking out or trying to knock out these older, basically obsolete missiles that the Iranians are sending. And so they haven't even unleashed a lot of their hypersonic missiles yet. So if Iran gets pushed into a corner, it's quite possible not only will they attack the Gulf states, which have been aiding and abetting against Iran, against the Yemenis all this time, the Gulf states in general, and the Muslim world in also in general, have long since turned their backs on the Palestinians, the Jordanians, Egyptians. One could argue that they've been turncoats and backstabbers all this time, right? But if you look at all the American bases in the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, throughout the Middle East, throughout the Persian Gulf, the U.S. continues to blatantly aid Israel to the point of using their fighter bombers, using their their fast jets, using their ordnance to launch from American warships, Tomahawk missiles, etc. Iran will feel obliged to launch strikes against the American bases. Now, Trump has made a big deal. I mean, at a time when they're supposed to be negotiating, Trump is announcing we're going to pull out all of our troops, so a lot of our troops out of the Middle Eastern bases because the situation is so tense right now. It's not exactly the kind of thing you'd say if you were really serious about, having negotiations. So not only will the American bases in some of these Gulf states, for example, get hammered, but I think that Iran might as well go after the oil refineries, the oil fields, the ports where all the tankers are in the Gulf states. Those are all corrupt, hardcore Wahhabist Sunni states anyway that have been utilized and been working hand in glove with the Zionist regime for a long time anyway. So I think the Arab world, the Muslim world in general, would be happy if some of these Gulf states were hammered under a hailstorm of missiles. I don't want it to happen, but just projecting forward what might likely happen, not only will they go after American bases, because the Americans clearly are helping the Israelis, but they'll go after the Gulf states and maybe Saudi Arabia too. And then if they do a blockade of the Straits of Hormuz, and let's say in our example, the Indonesians, remember Indonesia has the largest Muslim population in the world, in conjunction with the CCP, the Chinese PLA Navy, if the Indonesians decide to do a blockade of the Malacca Straits, most of the oil that the Asia Pacific receives from the Persian Gulf, from the Arabian Gulf, comes through the Malacca Straits. So not only would they shut down the Hormuz Straits, but they may shut down the Malacca Straits. That means that the economies of Japan, Korea, Australia, etc., would grind to a halt, right? So the whole world is going to be impacted by this. And the only way to make it stop is if there's an immediate ceasefire, that Israel holds his hand up and says, okay, I cry uncle, we're going to stop for a while. Of course, they're just going to try to buy themselves time like they always do and give the Americans time to, bring in more forces, what have you. But if they can just stop and just back off the throttle just a little bit, I think the whole world would be happy. But it's the direction it's going right now. We could be looking at an escalation, which could lead to a nuclear war.
Yeah, with the Gulf states, I mean, I've been to Abu Dhabi, to Dubai, and what is the name of the other one? Sharjah, and so forth. So, but honestly, these are states that run properly. Yeah. And, even as a foreigner, you have a lot of, yeah, you can walk there without a a hijab or anything as a Western woman, and actually life feels pretty good there. But yeah, they. And I don't think the Gulf states are interested in, Iran becoming, the biggest leader.
Well, like you said, they have a good thing going. I mean, look at all the trade, the commerce, the wealth generated for themselves, these Gulf states. You would think that the last thing they would want is to have this ruinous war, but that's what happens when they hitch their wagon, so to speak, upon this greater agenda of having to destroy Iran, right? Which is just the most insane thing that I've ever heard. We shouldn't even be having this conversation because none of it even makes sense on a rational human basis.
Yeah, I mean, all economies will grind to a halt. Yeah. If they shut down Hormuz, Strait of Hormuz, and the Malacca Strait, yeah. Everybody will suffer. Yeah, maybe not so much Russia. They have a lot of their own resources. And, with Russia still engaged in Ukraine, do you even think they can stretch themselves even thinner?
Russians, we're gonna have to finally just take over. They're gonna have to do a regime change at this point. Because, okay, if you look at Zelensky, he's a puppet, but all the money is still coming in, and all the help and all the arms are still coming in from the US and from NATO. So when Trump says this is not my war, that's nonsense because he hasn't turned off the spigot. The aid is still coming to Ukraine. If you want to end the war, stop supporting Ukraine. That Ukraine, everything, their military will just grind to a halt. As we know, they've been shanghaiing people off the streets, boys to go fight their ruinous war. And these recruits, so-called, they don't last a week or two at best before they're killed. So Trump, rather Putin, he may have to push his forces deeper and deeper and eventually take over Kiev.
Yeah, that is
Because as
probably
long as he's
something.
getting, what's that?
That is probably something that he would like to avoid, to destroy Kiev,
Yes, I
because that is
he's
where the
lucky.
original Tsars came from, and
Well, he's pretty
it,
much achieved all his, he's achieved all of his ends already. He's reclaimed those oblasts of Russian-speaking people that were being oppressed. He's pretty much wiped out the infrastructure of the Ukrainians, and he's pretty much inflicted enough damage on the military to make it unrecoverable, if that's a word. But they still have the means. Now, I didn't fall for all the propaganda when all these podcasters were crowing about, oh, 40 planes were wiped out, and that just really cripples Russia's nuclear triad capability. That was all nonsense. Now, first of all, a lot of those planes were out there because, as you know, as the terms of the START treaty, they have to be observable for verification purposes by overhead surveillance. But that wouldn't stop the Russians from putting dummy or decoy planes out there, or obsolescent planes that won't even fly, right? The deception is the oldest game in the book as far as warfare is concerned. So I'm not saying that's what they did, but even if you look at the top end and 40 planes were destroyed, how is that going to affect the Russians when they have submarine launch missiles? They have hypersonic missiles, they have fast jet bombers. No, it's not going to affect them at all. But the point being is that the fact that they were able to do that means that there's still going to be, at the very least, an irritant of the Ukrainians to continue to do these things and drag the war out. So I think at some point, Putin is going to have to do a decapitation. And, Zelensky is a figurehead, he's a puppet of the West. There's no doubt about that. But get rid of him and whoever's likely to be put in his place. They should do a regime change at this point. I think that Trump, rather Putin, has been very patient. He's had a very restrained approach to this whole war, even to the point of annoying his own generals who want him to move faster, right? But he's been very mindful of not, harming civilians. He's done his level best to only knock out infrastructure that is aiding the war effort in Ukraine. And we delved into the Ukraine issue because it's impossible, being in the same planet, to separate what's going on in Ukraine and what's going on in the Middle East.
Yeah. What do you make of the announcement that Forensic accountants have from the US have arrived in Ukraine to check the books and to see where all the money went, because they are suspecting some fraud. I mean, we know
Wow.
that Zelensky fleeced his pockets. Yeah, of course he did. But when
Where
I
did it
read,
end? The drug trafficking, the human trafficking, the arms trafficking is like where does it end, right? And all these NGOs pouring all this money. And then we have that phony schism between Trump and Elon Musk. What was that all about, right? It's just another sideshow. But I don't see anything coming out of that because they haven't even gone after the fraudsters in America who received millions and millions of dollars from in fraudulent earnings that was uncovered by the Doge operation. Nothing's happened to them. We don't see any indictments. We don't see any prosecutions. So all of that was just unless proven otherwise, was just meant to stir the pot further. So I don't see anything coming out of an investigation into, fraudulent monies being sent to Ukraine. It's all been fraud up till this point. Now, if memory serves, I think that a subpoena has been issued for George Soros to appear in a court. Let's see how that plays out. He could easily just thumb his nose and say, "No, I'm not going to show up." And then what are you going to do? Send Delta Force to go get him? I don't think so, right?
We will see how that plays out. I mean, if you really want to bring this to an end from the United States side, my goodness, stop the weapons, coming into Ukraine, switch off Starlink, and then Zelensky probably has no other choice than to sit down and talk. That would be an option.
There's the psychological profile of Zelensky too, as a narcissist, as a cokehead, as a someone suffering from all these delusions about himself, delusions of grandeur. He was recently in America begging for more money from Trump and the Americans, and then Trump had to pull him into line, right? Very publicly, kind of shamed Zelensky. But as long as Zelensky is there, who was put in there by the likes of Nuland and Blinken and all those types, and Soros, he's a figurehead that keeps this war going. So I don't see why they would have they shouldn't have much difficulty removing him if they really wanted to. They must have very good intelligence about his movements, about his communications, and I don't see why it should be so difficult either to send in like a missile strike or a drone strike, or send in Spetsnaz to take care of him once and for all. Because he is a figurehead to be sure, but he is the focal point that the West is using to funnel all these arms and all this money to. So I'm not going to shed any crocodile tears if Putin finally just gets rid of him. I would like him to do that, actually.
I'm amazed that it takes Russia so long to end this, and it also begs a lot of questions. Is Russia really militarily that strong as they like to present themselves, or did they never go into full gear? And if not, then why not? Because all of this could have been over a long time ago.
I agree. There's been many people that have been critical of Putin for not moving faster and wrapping this up last year. It just dragged on and on. And clearly, there's no point in Putin sitting down and talking with Zelensky because Zelensky's a drug-addled puppet. He's a figurehead. So It makes no sense to even talk to him because it's America's war working through Ukraine. So Zelensky really is just a figurehead. But if you get rid of Zelensky, then that's one less figurehead. So either the Americans come up with another figurehead or the Americans are forced to parlay. They're forced to negotiate, right? So see what the Habatists and what these freaks that want thermonuclear war desire is they want to hedge their bets. If they can't get a nuclear war going with, in Ukraine, they want to get a nuclear war going with Iran and Israel, preferably with both, right? They want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to hedge their bets. They want to increase their chances for a nuclear war. And a lot of people are worried about false flags. There's actually been leakage. I haven't been able to verify this for myself, but there's something going the rounds on Twitter slash X. Apparently, the Iranians had hacked into the Israeli databases and come up with a list of cities in America that are going to be nuked as part of this Samson option. To drag America kicking and screaming into war. See, because they want their cake and they want to eat it too. They want to use the US military, the woke, ineffectual US military in these wars, but they also want to destroy America. Probably that's as great a prize as destroying Iran is. One can't separate the two. Because they're inextricably linked. So this information has been leaked out. Haven't been able to verify it for myself. Did the Iranians hack into these Israeli databases? Maybe, maybe not. But we know, going back decades now, that there have been people, patriots in America, military insiders, who've suggested that at some point, there will be a number of nuclear explosions in America to end America once and for all, turn it into a huge chaotic cesspit, and it would be the new Atlantis, right? We know what happened to the old Atlantis, and they want a similar outcome for America as a new Atlantis to be utterly destroyed, turned into just a chaotic free-for-all, the country just divided into a war, or like these chaotic fiefdoms, right? Run by warlords and what have you. And on top of all that, Judith, this is insanity at all. If you w watch recent interviews with Mike Adams on his show, he's had people talking about how so many of these fighting age males have been brought into America and how groups like Aslan and these other militant Mexican groups have been brought into America. They've been there for decades already, right? So on top of that, and many of them are trained, they're hardcore militants, they're well armed, well trained. And on top of that, they publicly announce that they want to go to war with the cartels. So you already have an open, porous border that now the Trump regime is apparently trying to do something about, and they made some great inroads into sealing off the southern border, but it's very much like locking the barn door after the horse has been stolen, because there's already so many fighting age males, militants of various stripes, already in America, already well supplied. We know that Gavin Newsom is in the hip pocket of the CCP. There's arsenals already set in place in California and elsewhere. To arm whoever, right? And on top of that, they want to go to war against the cartels. CIA, Mossad trained cartels. Right now, there are former members of Delta Force who are training the cartels, right? That are advisors for the cartels. If they wanted to go after the cartels, they shouldn't have, they didn't have to make a public announcement. Just do it, right? Instead, they have to make this big announcement. So on top of everything going on in Ukraine, the Middle East, etc., Now they want to go to war against the cartels. It's all pointing in a direction of possibly a very bad outcome.
Yeah. So, James, that was the top of the hour, and we will see the patrons and James members on the other side.